Today on the 21st Show, the campaign to be the next U.S. Senator from Illinois after Dick Durbin's decision to not seek re-election. We'll have the second in our series of conversations. Congresswoman Robin Kelly has been in the U.S. House of Representatives since 2013. We'll talk with her live in studio about domestic policy, foreign affairs, and politics in an era dominated by President Donald Trump and the MAGA movement. We also want to put your questions to Congresswoman Kelly, so give us a call. 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. I'm Brian Mackey with Robin Kelly for the hour today on the 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. Candidates for office in Illinois are now circulating petitions, and there is a rare opportunity here next year, an open seat for the United States Senate, something we haven't had since 2010. There are three leading Democratic candidates so far: Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, whom we interviewed last week, Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, with whom we're trying to find a date, and Congresswoman Robin Kelly, who joins me now in the studio. A brief biography: Robin Lynn Kelly was born in 1956 in Harlem, New York. She's the daughter of a second-generation grocer and a postal worker. Early in life, she wanted to become a child psychologist. Studied at Bradley University in Peoria. She has a bachelor's in psychology and a master's in counseling from Bradley. And in Peoria, she directed a crisis nursery. Later in life, she earned a PhD in political science from Northern Illinois University in DeKalb. Kelly has worked in municipal government in Madison, Illinois, and Cook County. She was also an Illinois state lawmaker, then worked with Alexei Janulius when he was Illinois treasurer, and won her congressional seat in a special election in 2013. The district is vast. It starts at the Museum of Science and Industry on the south side of Chicago. It stretches west to include the towns of Dwight and Pontiac along Interstate 55. And it continues south to take in Danville in east central Illinois. Robin Kelly joins me live in our studio in Urbana today. Congresswoman Kelly, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Thanks for having me. It's good to be back.
Listeners, as ever, you can join us at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, let's start with a basic question. Why do you want to be a senator?
You know, I've worked on every level of government, as you just talked about, and 12 and a half years in Congress, and I know I'm very ready and very able to move to the next level. I've done the work. I'm doing the work. I've been an effective leader on every level. I have great relations in the House and in the Senate, and I know that I will be able to hit the ground running on day one. Trump will still be the president, and we need somebody that's ready to go immediately to not only fight. You know, fighting is one thing, but serving and getting the job done is something else.
Well, on that very point, we asked our listeners if they have questions for you. Beth in Champaign sent us a text message, wants to know how you plan to oppose President Trump and his agenda. She says that business as usual isn't working. What new ideas do you have?
Well, actually, we're opposing him now. I'm not waiting till I get to the Senate. And we are fighting with one arm tied behind our back. That's the truth. And I say I'm fighting to the next arm falls off, and then I'll start kicking. And but we need partners. You know, we're pushing every amendment that we can push. We're traveling the country, letting people know exactly what's going on. Because believe it or not, you know, according to polls, if you believe it, still a lot of people don't realize the bill that was passed. So we're asking for help from human rights organizations, from individuals, from healthcare organizations, because these are healthcare will greatly be affected when this bill is implemented. So it's really informing people, communicating with people, putting up every amendment we can put up with, and still speaking to our colleagues on the other side. Because we need some brave ones, you know, to say, do you really think this is right? And we know some of them do not, but just haven't had the backbone, whatever you want to call it, you know, to do the right thing.
Yeah. Well, on that point, Danny in DeKalb wants to know how you will protect individuals, especially children, currently enrolled in Medicaid, now that the federal government has made moves to drastically cut the program, or will in the future.
It hasn't been implemented yet, so what we're hoping that those who live in districts that are represented by Republicans, that they're making their voices heard. They're going to their offices. They're calling them. I know everybody can't come to D.C., but they're our partners in fighting back because we need those partners. If, you know, let them know we vote too, we're looking at what you're doing, and that we care. But I'm on the healthcare subcommittee. I was there 26 and a half hours straight and, putting an amendment after amendment. We went to the rules committee and did the same thing. But the harsh reality is we don't have, you know, the votes, but we're just trying to communicate with everybody so they know, you know, what's going on.
Last week, I was in Springfield for Governor's Day at the Illinois State Fair. I know you spoke at the breakfast meeting that day. I talked to a lot of just Democratic, you know, everyday Democrats, right? And a lot of them are pretty concerned that the party is losing younger voters. One man from Chicago singled out young black men in particular, whom we know moved to Trump in, you know, not a majority, but in measurable numbers. What is your understanding of what's happening there?
Well, you know, on that issue, a lot of black men did vote for Kamala. And I know we like to say, you know, what you just said, but I think it was 83 or 85%. So that's still a hefty, I would love that, you know, a hefty vote for a candidate. But I think—
But less than black women who are like 90-something
well,
percent.
We're the 92%, yeah. You know. We're the backbone of the party. But I think that— people have to feel that we care about them and that we're listening to them and that they have a voice and that there is economic opportunity, because that's part of it, too, that, you know, people have hope and that their issues are a concern. And we just have to, you know, keep communicating in every way that we can. We learned that lesson in November that even though I love being on the radio and on TV, but not everyone gets, in fact, the majority. And young people, especially, I just spoke to a young person that goes to U of I, and he told me, I don't even have cable, and a lot of my friends get their news from other friends and what other friends post or TikTok or Instagram. So we have to be in all those spaces.
Yeah. What do you think that those voters were not hearing from Democrats in particular, that, you know, especially the ones who went with President Trump?
I think that, I've heard this, and hopefully people see there is a difference, like what difference does it make? You know, or the other thing is, in examining just among colleagues, they look at him as being, you know, he does what he says, which I can't argue with that either. He's his authentic self and, you know, like those kind of things. And I think that appealed to some people. And he does have a show busy business kind of, you know, way about him, even though he's such a liar. and frankly, it is evil what they're doing now. It is evil. And, you know, I've had, you know, many people say to me, we didn't think he would do that. We just thought that was Trump. You know, there's definitely buyer's remorse, you know, and, you know, we just thought he was talking, but it's real. It's real. And people are feeling it or will feel it.
Let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Congresswoman Robin Kelly, who is one of the Democrats seeking to succeed Dick Durbin as a United States Senator. He is not running for re-election, as you know. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number, 800-222-9455. Well, on that point, you were just talking about younger people. They get news on TikTok, social media, or maybe they don't get any news at all. You know, we're in an environment where in politics, people seem to be rewarded for, being more raw and provocative. How do you distinguish yourself in that environment?
Well, if you were there, you heard me say that people always say, Robin, you're so nice, and those kind of things, which they do. And as I say, I am nice, but don't get it twisted. That doesn't mean I'm not a fighter. That doesn't mean I don't stand up, show up, speak up. There's many examples of that, no matter who, you know, the bully is. But I am always, and I feel very complimented when people say, you're so genuine, you're so authentic. And that's what I try to be, plain talk, you know, just my authentic self. I know I do the work. I know how to build relationships. I can get along with the best of them. That's why I've gotten legislation passed, only being in the majority 4 years, you know, in Congress. So I'm not trying to be provocative. I'm just trying to be me.
How do you, I mean, do you have, and I mean, obviously you've been in Congress for more than a decade now, so you have your own personality and approach. But, you know, when I think of different senators and people, you know, Senator Durbin has a very measured approach, right? Mm-hmm. He's a man of procedure and policy and that sort of thing. And there are others who are more bombastic, giving big speeches. How do you see yourself as a legislator?
I see myself as hands-on. You know, I look at my leadership as grounded in service and compassion. And I know in my office, you know, my mantra is, two things. We have to be respectful of each other and those we serve, and we have to be responsive. And that's, I try to be, you know, that same way. I make my share of speeches. I try to be as informed as possible, you know, before I make decisions. I mean, there's sometimes I'm probably, you know, I can be spontaneous too, depending. But, I wouldn't say it's measured like Dick Durbin, but I try to be informed. But also, I'm a doer. I'm a doer.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about some policy areas, and I'm going to start on the domestic side of things. We were talking about the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, as it's formally known, a few moments ago. On the question of healthcare, Gina in Springfield wants to know what you believe should be done to assure good healthcare for all in Illinois and throughout the United States. She was very pleased last week to hear Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton say she intends to promote Medicare for all.
I don't mean this in a cavalier way, but whatever we decide to call it, I think there should be universal health care. Everyone should have health care. And I've always, you know, said that there's no reason in the richest country in the history of the world that everyone doesn't have quality health care. And if other countries can do it, we need to figure it out. You know, I look at things we all do better when we all do better. So we're all healthier when we're all healthier. We're all safer when we're all safer. So I'm on the Medicaid for all, but, you know, we have to get something passed. And so if it's not exactly called that, but as long as every single person has quality health care and access to health care.
Do you think ideally is it like a UK, Canada, you know, Nordic system or single payer, or is it, you know, expansion of Obamacare even further kind of thing?
Well, when the Affordable Care Act was passed, everyone knew that it wasn't perfect, but we've just never had the right people voting at the same time as you need to make the changes that are really needed or make the improvements. So I'm open to looking at, you know, what's the best thing to do for the people.
Yeah. We've also seen, just on sticking with domestic policy, we've seen President Trump inserting himself into major business deals between America and international companies, right? That differs from previous administrations, whether it's the Nippon-U.S. Steel mm-hmm. deal or, you know, federal government is apparently going to take a cut of NVIDIA and AMD AI chip sales to China. What do you think about the president's approach here? Do you see value in intervening in the free market in this way?
No. I think that, you know, he's taught us things that we have to look at differently whenever we're in charge again. His fingers are just in too many pots, and sometimes not in the pots maybe they should be in and what he should be helping with. But I look at this all for selfish reasons. He's doing this for his gain or for, you know, the well-off and the well-connected, for their gain, not the gain, you know, of the American people. He made a lot of promises, you know, day one what he was going to do, and none of that has happened yet. But I think he just looks out for the few and not really for the many. And is it really helping? You know, it doesn't look like it. You know, more time will tell. But no, I think that he's out of place, very much out of place in many ways.
Hmm. All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Lynn is calling from DeKalb on line one. Lynn, thanks for calling in.
You're welcome. Happy to do so. I'd just like to say that I met Robin many years ago, very early in her political career, at the Dubin home in DeKalb. I am so proud of the DeKalb Democratic Party that we saw Robin's incredible potential, her compassion, how astute she is, and I wish her all the best. You go, girl.
Okay. I don't know. There wasn't a question there. I'm sure you're happy to take that call if you want to respond to that.
Thank you so much, Lynn. I need to tape that and wake up every day to that. Thank you so, so much. I'm working hard for sure. Thank you. Thanks for your faith in me.
All right. Just a minute and a half till we need to take a break on the program. Got another message from one of your current constituents. Lloyd is in Danville, and he wants to know what your plan is for getting Vermilion County residents to the polls to challenge the MAGA agenda.
Well, when I came into office, I immediately, you know, I remember when I first won, someone wrote to the paper that, you know, I wasn't going to be present in the downstate part of my district. So, you know, my staff was upset. I said, we're going to show them. We're not going to tell them. We're not, you know. So I've spent a lot of time in Danville, brought resources to Danville, and spent time with the Vermilion County Democrats and have worked with them. And I continue to do that. Of course, we'll take their suggestions, too, because they're here, you know, and they are focused on it. But if there's something I could do in coming down and resources and, you know, I'm trying to raise money myself, but in helping them raise money to get voices out. But I plan to be present or, you know, have volunteers present to help out where we can and trusted messengers.
Yeah. All right. We are going to take a break. We will continue with Congresswoman Robin Kelly, who is one of the Democrats running to succeed United States Senator Dick Durbin in next year's primary election. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. More to come here on The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are speaking with Congresswoman Robin Kelly, one of the Democrats who wants to succeed U.S. Senator Dick Durbin when his term expires in 2027. We spoke with Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton, one of the other candidates, last week. We're working to book a conversation with Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy, as well as some of the Republicans who are circulating petitions to run in that election. That is still being worked out as we go to air today. But if you want to join us, if you have a question for Congresswoman Kelly, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. All right, Joe in Charleston sent a text message, wonders what kind of federal gun policy reform would you sponsor or support? For example, keeping guns from Indiana and Wisconsin out of Chicago.
Well, when I ran for Congress, I actually ran on gun violence prevention. And the bill that we passed, the Bipartisan Safer Communities Act, first bill we passed in 30 years, didn't go as far as some of us wanted, but my part of the bill was the trafficking and store purchasing. That's always been my voice in Congress because people, when I would come back to D.C., what is going on in Chicago? What's going on? You have the toughest gun laws. And I would tell people, if no one else around us does, then it's hard for us to, you know, do what we need to do. So that's always been something I've harped on, as well as, you know, in Congress, we always, when there was a mass shooting, you know, stood up, you know, moment of silence, sat down and did nothing. And I brought the voice of, what about the everyday person that dies one by one by one, the slow motion massacre that happens across the United States is actually more, you know, of those people. We never, you know, talk about that. And that's what led me to being the only one of 435 for the next moment of silence. I didn't stand up. I just couldn't do it anymore. And I went, it was a California shooting, and I went to the delegation, not trying to be disrespectful, but I feel like we're being disrespectful because we don't do anything. We stand up, sit down, and the silence is deafening. So I would still You know, we still don't have universal background checks. And the thing I want people to know, we have a gun violence prevention committee. The head of it, his hobby is guns. He owns a lot of guns. It's his hobby. He guns and he grows wine. I don't know what kind of combo that is, but, you know, so there are gun owners, but they want gun safety. That's all we want. We're not trying to take your gun from you if you have it legally and not trying to hurt yourself or anybody else. I would definitely also, I don't think everyone needs an assault weapon. You know, I think that's a problem. And, you know, we made some changes, but, you know, protecting, you know, like the red flag laws, really making sure also that we are enforcing the laws that are on the book and that we give to the money needed to alcohol, tobacco, and firearms. You know, they can't have no resources and then do their job.
Now, I mean, you know, I grew up in the south suburbs of Chicago in that part of your district. So, you know, people from that area, we hear guns, we think of violence, shootings, gangs, that kind of thing. People in a lot of other parts of Illinois, that's a cherished family hunting trips and, you know, fun on the gun range. Do you own a gun? Have you ever shot a gun?
I don't own a gun. I shot a gun because the chair of the committee made all of us go to the shooting range. I'm not comfortable with it, but I come from a family of cops. My son owns more than one gun. My grandparents had a mom and pop grocery store, and I worked in the store from 8 years old, and I had to jump over my grandfather's rifle to get to the bathroom. So that's the message I'm trying to give. It's not that if you totally respect people that hunt, you know, for their safety, we ask people that have guns to make sure they're locked up. We lose 8 kids a day because guns aren't locked up safely. So we need safe storage, you know. So, yeah, I think that unfortunately that train left the station. We want to take your gun. We want to take your gun. But so many people on the committee, I have friends, you know, for safety that own guns. You know, I don't, but again, if you have yours legally and you're not trying to hurt yourself or anybody else, then I'm fine.
I mean, there's more than one Democratic legislator who owns a gun from that area, too. I mean, right?
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I think that, unfortunately, that message left the station that they're just trying to take your gun, and that's, you know, that's not true. And there's the Charleston loophole that I would love to see pass that really came from the church in South Carolina. And, you know, you have 3 days to tell someone they could have a gun or not. And if it doesn't definitively come back no, you can sell the gun. So they sold the gun, and then it came back that, no, he shouldn't have a gun. But it was too late, you know. You know, for those 9 church members.
So. Yeah. Earlier this week, another issue, domestic politics. We saw a billboard that appeared to be a recruitment effort for the Proud Boys. Went up in Breeze, Illinois, which is a town a little ways outside of the St. Louis part of Illinois. What do you think of that?
Well, as being one of the last 20 out on my hands and knees on January 6th, I think it's horrible, but I'm sure, you know, there's something about First Amendment rights, you know, that would come up about it. But I think it's terrible because they're, I don't look at them as a group that's up to good and really cares about, you know, humanity. And I know, you know, like I said, I was there on January 6th. I saw the devastation. I was on my hands and knees with at least 20 other members hoping to get out without being harmed.
We've been through periods of violence in American history before, you know, the Weather Underground bombings. Certainly Jim Crow, you know, was a terrible time in this country for a lot of people. What sort of systematic response would you like to see from the government to keep us from going to an even darker place than we've been in the past few years?
Well, it doesn't help that the person in the White House is in the White House. I think since, I'm not, like you said, stuff has gone on throughout history, but I think he made it very permissible. I think we may have made gains, but I think he's made it permissible. But also some people would say that because of what he's done, other people have felt comfortable doing what they're doing. And now you know where people really, really are. But, I believe, you know, we still have a civil rights, human rights battle, and we do need to look at laws, but also I think that individually all of us need, we have to step up in our way also. Like in my area, you know, there's a lot of things I've done. I'm a part of starting diversity dinners just for us to get to know each other from the South Suburban communities. And I actually did it 3 times or 4 times in Congress. You know, I called it Breaking Bread, where Dems and Republicans got together and we didn't even talk about politics, just getting to know each other, you know, as people. I think that's really, really important. I mean, a law is not going to change your heart. You know, I think us being exposed to each other, and we need the laws, but I don't think that's always, you know, statistics and everything always doesn't change. It's just you meeting people, having positive experiences and things like that. But I mean, we can't stop a group from, you know, getting together, but, you know, we can keep them in check maybe, you know, as much as possible.
Abolish ICE, right? This used to be a popular catchphrase among progressives. Others criticized it for making Democrats seem like they didn't care about border security. But now we have ICE agents operating, you know, as a paramilitary force, right? They're showing up in cities without uniforms or name tags. They're driving armored vehicles. They're wearing face masks. Do you think America will have to abolish ICE and start over with this after what we've been through and or what we're seeing happening now?
I think that, you know, there's legislation that they should not be able to, you know, be untitled or wear a mask and things like that. If you think about my state colleagues that were killed in Minnesota, I believe the person had a mask on. I don't think that should be allowed. People should have to identify themselves, show some credible, you know, identity. And I don't know, you know, it might come to that we have to build it all over again. I know we have to build trust, you know, with the American people, but what's going on is devastating and horrible and destructive. And, you know, whether you're a citizen or not, because there are people that are here and are Americans or people that are naturalized and they've been stopped also. And also, I will say that we all care about the border. We all want border security, but there's a better way to do it than we're doing it. Again, a system that needs to be reformed. Again, we need to make sure we have ambassadors and diplomats in all those countries. We, you know, haven't had that same system, you know, since Trump has been in office. And also, we need, I would say, social servicey civil servants on the border also that know how to deal with, you know, work with all kind of people. I think that's really important that, you know, everyone deserves respect. And, you know, people are running because if you speak to them, they want a better life. They want a better life. But I also know just personally, my cousin married someone from Mexico, and she went there to teach English as a second language. Met the love of her life, and just what he went through, a young man, 2 degrees, engineering and graphic arts, and what he had to go through, I keep telling him, write a book, you know, was not right, not right.
You know, I want to press you on that point about ICE in particular, though, because it seems like at least some of the people, you know, you see isolated social media videos or news reports, seem to be politically aligned with President Trump and the MAGA movement. Can that be reintegrated into a Democratic administration in the future? You see what I mean?
But I think that we all want border security. That's what I'm saying. And but also there's such a disrespect for, you know, it feels like immigrants, undocumented or not. And also, why are they aligned? I think because President Trump and his cronies have pushed so much fear, so much, you know, it's just about America. Forget everybody else. And they're coming to get your jobs. You know, he made comments. He's coming to get, like, your black jobs, you know, and things like that. So I think that he's pushed division and people that follow him, you know, agree with that. That's what they're hearing over and over and over. But if you look at the contributions that immigrants have made to this country and people, immigrants that are working and undocumented but paying into the system but are not going to get any benefits out of the system, you know, people need to realize that, too. If we said all of you 11 million plus people go home, our economy would suffer. We're suffering now because people are not going to work. You know, people are scared to send their kids to school.
All right, let me remind listeners, this is the 21st show. We're speaking with Congresswoman Robin Kelly, candidate for United States Senate, seeking to succeed U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. 800-222-9455, 800-222-9455. So one of the big areas of responsibility of the Congress is foreign affairs. Let's talk about that. It's been going on 2 years since Hamas invaded Israel and kidnapped few hundred people, killed more than 1,000 people, and Israel has now 60,000 Palestinians have been killed in Gaza. Is what's happening in Gaza a genocide?
You know, I don't know if that's my determination to make, but I stand by what I said, that the humanitarian crisis is horrible, and I would have voted with our senators, Durbin and Duckworth, and how they voted, because I think that we cannot keep this going. We cannot see starving children, starving pregnant moms, and, you know, just continue. It is truly a humanitarian crisis. And I would have, you know, like I said, voted with them. And
explain that to our listeners, because you have voted in the past for the legislation the budget bills that
I have stood with Israel. But in this moment, I cannot. And it's not, when I say can't stand with Israel, it's with Netanyahu and his regime, that it's nothing, just like people have a problem with Donald Trump, you know. But that I'm not Donald Trump, and I don't agree, you know, what he does. And I've had Israelis in my office, and two of them had hostages, family members hostages, and one young lady hid under dead bodies to get out of the concert alive. And they lectured me about, don't just say because you're Palestinian, you mean Hamas, because they told me about their Palestinian friends. They want peace. Yes, the hostages need to be released, but they don't like the way he's going about doing things. And we have got to get to a two-state solution. I mean, this is just ridiculous. And we can't, I don't want to see us aid Netanyahu and further starvation of too many innocent people, further death of too many innocent people.
When did it change in your mind? When did Israel go too far in the past 2 years?
Well, I mean, as the, I guess the dead bodies, you know, just like, I know it was horrible what happened on October 7th, but as I've listened, like I told you, I try to listen to everybody and stay informed. And I've heard people that study this, you know, say that it didn't just start October 7th. There's just been so much unrest. October 7th was horrible, but it didn't just start there. And that, you know, Palestinians feel like second class, you know, citizens. And but also to have peace, you know, Hamas needs to want the peace, and the Israeli government, you know, needs the peace too. But people need to be treated like human beings. And, you know, this is not helping. Again, the hostages need to be released, but also get the aid in, the medical aid, the get the food in. Even, you know, like I said, Israelis are saying that and begging, you know, for that. Also, I listened to a human rights organization from Israel, and they're saying it also. And I know there's concern that, oh, Hamas is just going to take the food. Well, throw in extra. You know, if they take the food, fine, but make sure there's enough, you know, for the starving people. Because, you know, if a lot of young people die, there's not going to be, you know, people to take over and get old.
All right, we are going to have to take a break on the program. We will continue this conversation with Congresswoman Robin Kelly, who is one of the Democrats running to fill the vacancy that will be created when Dick Durbin retires at the end of his term in 2027. If you want to join us today, if you have questions for the Congresswoman, 800-222-9455 is the number. That's 800-222-9455. 9455. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Congresswoman Robin Kelly, who is running for United States Senate in the Democratic primary next year. She currently represents a district that goes from the south side of Chicago, Museum of Science and Industry, all the way down to Danville, and it pushes west over to Dwight and Pontiac. Takes in part of Interstate 55. It's a big district in east, central, northeast Illinois. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455 is the number. 800-222-9455. So before the break, we were talking about Israel and Gaza and Palestine. And I want to stay with foreign affairs because Ukraine has also been much in the news. Does the United States have an interest in a free Ukraine?
We should have an interest in a free Ukraine. If he is successful with Ukraine, what's going to stop him from...
Putin of Russia.
Sorry.
Yeah.
What's going to stop him from going to the other countries? And, of course, some of those other countries are NATO countries. So, you know, we have a decision. Do we pay with money or do we pay with our military? Do we play, you know, pay with blood? Do we get into another war? So I think that, you know, we have to support Ukraine because I see no stopping in Putin, and he obviously really just toys with President Trump, in my opinion. You know, we roll out the red carpet, you know.
Literally, in Alaska.
Literally.
Yeah.
And where has it gotten us? Not very far. Not far at all.
What do you think of the president's approach to meeting one-on-one with Putin in Alaska? Really the only place, I think, that he's been outside of Russia since the war started, because a lot of other countries won't welcome him. And then meeting one-on-one with Zelensky. Senator Durbin always maintained no deal without Ukrainian, you know, support mm-hmm. for that deal. What do you think of the president's approach?
You know, I guess going to my counseling days, I'm fine with him meeting with Putin and him meeting with Zelensky and then bringing them together. You know, you want to hear what he has to say. Maybe he's more comfortable saying more things privately without the other person at first, but there can be no deal without Ukraine agreeing. And the thing about the land, he came and took their land, and then they're talking about Ukraine giving up land. I mean, that doesn't make sense to me. It's their land. Why should they have to give up their land? And that someone invaded their country and that be up for negotiations. That doesn't make sense to me.
You know, we spend so much time in America, well, to the extent we do talk about what's happening in other places in the world on Israel, Palestine, mm-hmm. Ukraine. There's a war in Sudan, right? Why do you think people don't really, why hasn't that captured the American attention the way these other conflicts have?
Because Africa doesn't attract the same attention. And really, I think that if it was, even actually, after a while, Ukraine didn't attract as much attention. Really, that's where it is now, you know. But I guess that's where you guys come in, the media and, you know, TV, radio, podcasts. You keep things, you know, in people's eye, you know, a lot of times, and more so even than we can. And I just think that, you know, Africa gets ignored much more than it should get ignored, because you're right in what you're saying.
You know, we saw the president and his ally Elon Musk destroy USAID, International Development Agency for International Development. Should we fund that? Do you think, should it be rebuilt? What do you think of that?
I definitely think it should be rebuilt. I'm on something called House Democracy Partnerships that Nancy Pelosi appointed me on. So either I travel or Zoom and meet people like me all around the world. And also I'm a part of a bipartisan Aspen. They take a bipartisan group of people, you know, that they pay for, you know, to different places in the world. And I've gotten the opportunity to meet so many people and see the good that USAID has done. And also it puts people back on their feet. We're in different countries, but we're all on the same planet. And again, we all do better when we all do better, when we all have, you know, opportunities. Do we need to evaluate the program? We need to evaluate all programs that we do, whether you're in government or you're in business or whatever you do, you know, social service. But I've seen the good. I've seen the people that have been fed. I've seen people that went from the drug world to doing different things in, you know, South America. I've seen, people teaching people how to fend, you know, for themselves in a productive manner. I've been in Africa. I've been in South America, the Caribbean, just different places that USAID has been very beneficial. And also, we feed a lot of people. Where do we think that food comes from? Our farmers, you know? So they've felt the impact of the tearing apart of USAID also.
And yet, we have people who are homeless here in the U.S. We have people who are hungry here in the U.S. We have so many problems, addiction. Should America continue to seek to be a global superpower? Is that good for America? Is that good for the world?
You know, we definitely should take care of, you know, there's no reason why we're not taking care of the homeless here or people that are hungry. I agree, you know, with all of that, but I also, we're all a part of this world. And do we want to see, you know, people do no fault of their own starve? We've benefited from people all over the world also with, you know, with inventions, with, you know, healthcare, with things they've come up with too. You know, we all help each other. We're all in this together. And I think hopefully that leads to a more peaceful world where most people can live their best life.
All right. I want to play a piece of tape from one of our listeners, another question. Let's listen to that.
This is Sam from Springfield. The U.S. Senate is already an anti-democratic body because a state like Montana gets the same two votes as a state like Illinois or California, which has a much greater population than Montana. Now, the filibuster rule makes the anti-democratic body even more anti-democratic because it allows a minority of the Senate to control what's going on. If you're elected, would you work to repeal the filibuster rule?
Yes, I would. That rule, as well as the blue slip, that keeps...
this is where one senator can stop...
Hold up the judge...
Appointments and
appointments.
Military.
I would work to repeal that also. I'm very...
So just to be clear, you would support eliminating the filibuster entirely. Get rid of it. 50 votes, 51 votes, that's it.
Yeah. And it's tough because now we're in the minority and they need 60 votes to pass a vote, but not when it comes to like the budget and not when it comes to judges. So those are two really important, you know.
We keep adding exceptions, right? People keep adding exceptions. Well,
right.
No, we don't need the filibuster for this or that or the Supreme Court.
I mean, it has saved us, you know, from some things, but, you know, we don't have it in the House. You know, it's majority rules, and because we would have been able to stop a lot of things, actually, you know, but he is right that it doesn't sound very democratic. And the reason the blue slip I speak about, because I'm very close with Terry Sewell from Alabama, and when I listen to what she says, you know, there has been no diversity in judges, and, you know, it's been really hard, you know, to get true representation. So, you know, I would do that. And maybe there'll be, once I get there, some things that come up where people say, well, what about that that I'm not thinking about? But we've discussed it, you know, in the House. And we've passed really good bills over there that we have not been able to get passed. You know, when I think about the John Lewis voting rights bill, when I think about some criminal justice, you know, George Floyd, there's things we have not been able to get done. And again, the appointment of judges, and it's been because of things like that.
What about restructuring the Supreme Court, packing the Supreme Court, right? Speaking of anti-democratic institutions.
Well, two things. You know, one of the appointments should have been Obama's and the other one should have been Biden's. You know, the rules didn't apply. Mitch McConnell did his thing, you know.
I guess there are a lot of Democrats out there who think Republicans don't play fair. Maybe Democrats should start to change the rules as well.
I guess I know some people have said, you know, add more, but we couldn't get that passed now anyway, you know, because we don't have the votes. But when we have the votes to add more, but then will it just go back and forth depending on, you know, who's
55 member Supreme Court? Why not?
Yeah. Right? I mean, so I don't know about that, but maybe we need to codify, you know, if you are the president and like President Obama had, what, 10 or 11 months ago, and they said, no, he's leaving. So, you know, looking at what do we need to put in black and white that these kind of things don't happen. But then when, I think Biden was leaving or something, then they took away his right, even, you know what I mean? It wasn't fair. But just like with what's happening in Texas, what we're saying, you know, I believe in fair maps, but we got to fight fire with fire because, you know, of what they're doing. So I'm not saying that should go on forever, the back and forth. But for right now, there are some things we do have to do because, you know, I think they feel like they may not win November 2026. So they're trying to do something about it now.
So we began this conversation in part talking about young people and trying to reach young people, young voters. One of the things I hear from people is that they feel that maybe public officials, you know, they can't relate to them. Right. We've seen a number of instances. President Biden was fairly old. Senator Durbin chose to resign or to not run for re-election. But I think we'd probably be here saying you'd be telling me how great he was if he had decided to run for re-election. So
he'd be better than what we are now.
Should there be a mandatory retirement age for members of Congress?
I don't think so. And, you know, when I was a state rep, I met with different people that had you're not saying term limits, but term limits, and they don't like that they did that. I've spoken to many people that regret that their state went that way. I think that it depends on the person. People love Auntie Max. I don't care what age, Maxine Waters. People love Bernie Sanders. People don't talk about his age. I think it depends. People love Nancy Pelosi. You know, I think it depends on who you're talking about.
And yet there was one of your Republican colleagues was found in a nursing home.
Well, that person should retire. Yeah. I mean, I think it's good to have generational differences in Congress. I mean, that represents the entire United States. And I just, you know, it depends on the person. I mean, I see it.
Forgive me, sir. You would be 70 when sworn into the Senate if elected. How long would you think you might serve for?
It depends on my, you know, how I feel, my health, what I think I'm, you know, contributing. I mean, we have to be honest with ourselves, too. I'm not, you know, saying that. But I know, you know, I work hard. I don't see anything stopping me, you know, from doing that. I will also always, as I do, surround myself with truth tellers. But when I, you know, people say that, but again, people love Maxine Waters, the Congressional Black Caucus Foundation. We have this big event every September. Her forum is filled with young people. Bernie Sanders. You know, I just think it really depends, you know, on the person, truly. Mm-hmm.
Well, Congresswoman Robin Kelly, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show and sharing your views. Congresswoman Kelly is one of three Democrats and as yet to be determined number of Republicans who are seeking to succeed U.S. Senator Dick Durbin. We are planning to interview as many of them as will talk to us here on the 21st show. You can also check out our interview with one of the other Democrats, Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. That was last week. That's on our website, 21stshow.org. Coming up tomorrow on the program, who are the landscapers who mow our lawns, trim our trees, and rake our leaves? Many of them, especially in the Midwest, are Mexican immigrants. Sergio Limas writes about his experience with that work and the stories and struggles of those who come to America seeking a better life in his new book, Los Yarderos. That's coming up tomorrow. Plus, we'll visit the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library and Museum in Springfield, where a temporary exhibit aims to make Lincoln artifacts more accessible to visitors who are blind. Plus, they've recently acquired a new 21-star flag from when Illinois had just become the 21st state. That's all coming up tomorrow on The 21st Show. Get it? You can find our past conversations on our website, 21stshow.org. We've also got links to our podcast there, our email address, every other way to get in touch with us. You can also find us on Apple, Spotify, YouTube, wherever you listen. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Leili Nazarova is an associate producer, and our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick's our news director. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.